Chapter 7. Now, slave, how long am I to wait for my chariot thundered the witch? Uncle Andrew cowered away from her. Now that she was really present, all the silly thoughts he had had while looking at himself in the glass were oozing out of him. But Aunt Letty at once got up from her knees and came over to the center of the room. "And who is this young person, Andrew, may I ask?" said Aunt Letty in an icy voice. "Distinguished foreigner, very important person," he stammered. "Rubbish," said Aunt Letty, and then turning to the witch, "Get out of my house this moment, you shameless hussy, or I'll send for the police." She thought the witch must be someone out of the circus, and she did not approve of bare arms. "What woman is this?" asked Jadis. "Down on your knees, minion, before I blast you." "No strong language in this house, if you please, young woman," said Aunt Letty. Instantly, as it seemed to Uncle Andrew, the queen towered up to an even greater height. Fire flashed from her eyes. She flung out her arms with the same gesture and the same horrible-sounding words that had lately turned the palace gates of Charn to dust. But nothing happened except that Aunt Letty, thinking that those terrible words were meant to be ordinary English, said, "I thought as much. The woman is drunk. Drunk! She can't even speak clearly." It must have been a very terrible moment for the witch when she suddenly realized that her power of turning people into dust, which had been quite real in her own world, was not going to work in ours. But she did not lose her nerve, even for a second. Without wasting a thought on her disappointment, she lunged forward, caught Aunt Letty round the neck and the knees, raised her high above her head, as if she had been no heavier than a doll, and threw her across the room. While Aunt Letty was still hurling through the air, the housemaid, who was having a beautifully exciting morning, put her head at the door and said, "If you please, sir, the Amsoms come." "Lead on, slave," said the witch to Uncle Andrew. He began muttering something about regrettable violence, must really protest, but at a single glance from Jadis, he became speechless. She drove him out of the room and out of the house, and Diggory came running down the stairs just in time to see the front door close behind them. "Jiminy," he said, "she's loose in London, and with Uncle Andrew. I wonder what on earth is going to happen now." "Oh, Master Diggory," said the housemaid, who was really having a wonderful day, "I think Mrs. Kiddley hurt herself somehow." So they both rushed into the drawing room to find out what had happened. If Aunt Letty had fallen on bare boards or even on the carpet, I suppose all of her bones would have been broken, but by the good luck that she had fallen into the mattress. Aunt Letty was a very tough old lady, aunts often were in those days. After she had some sal volatile, she sat still for a few moments. She said that there was nothing the matter with her except for a few bruises. Very soon she was taking charge of the situation. "Sarah," she said to the housemaid, who had never had such a day before, "go around to the police station at once and tell them that there is a dangerous lunatic at large. I will take Mrs. Kirk's lunch up to her myself." Mrs. Kirk was, of course, Diggory's mother. When Mother's lunch had been seen to, Diggory and Aunt Letty had their own. After that, he did some hard thinking. The problem was how to get the witch back to her own world, or at any rate, out of ours, as soon as possible. Whatever happened, she must not be allowed to go rampaging about the house. Mother must not see her. And, if possible, she must not be allowed to go rampaging about London, either. Diggory had not been in the drawing room when she tried to blast Aunt Letty, but he had seen her blast the gates at Charn, so he knew her terrible powers, and he did not know that she had lost any of them by coming into our world. He knew that she wanted to conquer our world. At the present moment, as far as he could see, she might be blasting Buckingham Palace or the Houses of Parliament, and it was almost certain that quite a number of policemen had by now been reduced to little heaps of dust. There didn't seem to be anything he could do about that. "But the ring seemed to work like magic," thought Diggory. "If I can only touch her and then slip on my yellow, we shall both go into the wood between the worlds. I wonder, will she go all faint again there? Was that something the place does to her, or was it only the shock of being pulled out of her own world? But I suppose I'll have to risk it. And how am I going to find the beast? I don't suppose Aunt Letty will let me go out, not unless I said where I was going. And I haven't got more than 2 pence. I'd need any amount for buses and trams if I went looking all over London. Anyway, I haven't the faintest idea where to look. I wonder if Uncle Andrew is still with her. It seemed in the end that the only thing he could do was to wait and hope that Uncle Andrew and the witch would come back. If they did, he must rush out and get hold of the witch and put on his yellow ring before she had a chance to get into the house. That meant he must watch the front door like a cat watching a mouse's hole. He dared not leave his post for a moment. So he went into the dining room and glued his face, as they say, to the window. It was a bow window from which you can see the steps up to the front door and see up and down the street so that no one could reach the front door without your knowing. I wonder what Polly's doing, Diggory thought to himself. He wondered about this a good deal as the first slow half hour ticked on. But you need not wonder, for I'm going to tell you. She had got home late for dinner, with her shoes and stockings very much wet. When they asked her what she had been doing and where on earth she was, she said that she had been out with Diggory Kirk. Under further questioning, she said that she had got her feet wet in a pool of water, and that the pool was in a wood. When asked where the wood was, she said she didn't quite know. When she asked if it was in one of the parks, she said truthfully enough that she supposed it might be a sort of park. From all of this, Polly's mother got the idea that Polly had gone off, without telling anyone, to some part of London she didn't know, and had gone to a strange park and amused herself jumping into puddles. As a result, she was told that she had been very naughty indeed, and that she wouldn't be allowed to play with that Kirk boy any more, if anything of the sort ever happened again. Then she was given dinner, with all the nice parts left out, and sent to bed for 2 solid hours. It was a thing that happened to one quite often in those days. So while Diggory was staring out of the dining room window, Polly was lying in bed, and both were thinking how terribly slowly the time could go. I think myself I would rather have been in Polly's position. She had only to wait for the end of her 2 hours. But every few minutes, Diggory would hear a cab or a baker's van or a butcher's boy coming round the corner and think, "Here she comes," and then find it wasn't. And in between those false alarms for what seemed hours and hours, the clock ticked on, and one big fly, high up and far out of reach, buzzed against the window. It was one of those houses that get very quiet and dull in the afternoon and always seem to smell of mutton. During his long watching and waiting, one small thing happened which I shall have to mention, because something important came of it later on. A lady called with some grapes for Diggory's mother, and as the dining room door was open, Diggory couldn't help overhearing Aunt Letty and the lady as they talked in the hall. "What lovely grapes!" came Aunt Letty's voice. "I'm sure if anything could do her good, these will. But poor dear little Mabel, I'm afraid it would need fruit up from the land of youth to help her now. Nothing in this world would do much." Then they lowered their voices and said a lot more that he couldn't hear from where he was sitting. If he had heard that bit about the land of youth a few days ago, he would have thought Aunt Letty was just talking about meaning without meaning anything in particular, the ways that grown-ups sometimes do, and it probably wouldn't have interested him. He almost thought so now, but suddenly it flashed upon him in his mind that he now knew, even if Aunt Letty didn't, that there really were other worlds, and that he himself had been in one of them. At that rate, there might be a real land of youth somewhere. There might be almost anything. There might be fruit in some other world that could really cure his mother. Oh, well, you know how it feels if you begin hoping for something that you want desperately badly? You almost fight against the hope because it is too good to be true. You've been disappointed so often beforehand. That was how Diggory felt. But it was no good trying to throttle his hope. It might really, really just might be true. So many odd things had happened already, and he had the magic rings. There must be worlds that you can get to through every pole in the wood. He could hunt through them all. And then, mother, well, again. Everything right again. He forgot all about the watching of the witch. His handles were already going to the pocket that he kept his yellow ring in, when all at once he heard the sound of galloping. Hello. What's that? Thought Diggory. Fire engine? I wonder what house is on fire. Great Scott, it's coming here. Why, it's her. I needn't tell you what he meant and who he meant by her. First came the hansom. There was no one in the driver's seat. On the roof, not sitting, but standing on the roof, swaying with superb balance as it came to full speed, round the corner, with one wheel in the air, was Jadis, the Queen of Queens and the Terror of Charn. Her teeth were bared, her eyes shone like fire, and her long hair streamed out behind her like a comet's tail. She was flogging the horse without mercy. Its nostrils were wide and red, and its sides were spotted with foam. It galloped madly up to the front door, missing the lamppost by an inch, and then reared up on its hind legs. The hansom crashed into the lamppost and shattered into several pieces. The witch, with a magnificent jump, had sprung clear just in time to land on the horse's back. She settled herself astride and leaned forward, whispering things in its ear. They must have been things meant not to quiet it, but to madden it. It was on its hind legs again in a moment, and its neigh was like a scream. It was all hooves and teeth and eyes and tossing mane. Only a splendid rider could have stayed on its back. Before Diggory had recovered his breath, a good many other things began to happen. A second hansom dashed up close behind the first. Out of it, there jumped a fat man in a frock coat and a policeman. Then came a third hansom, with two more policemen in it. After it came about 20 people, mostly the errand boys, on bicycles, all ringing their bells and letting out cheers and catcalls. Last of all came a crowd of people on foot, all very hot from running, but obviously enjoying themselves. Windows shot up in all the houses of the street, and a housemaid or a butler appeared at every front door. They wanted to see what all the fun was about. Meanwhile, an old gentleman had just begun to struggle shakily out of the ruins of the first hansom. Several people rushed forward to help him, but as one pulled him one way and another, perhaps he would not have gone quite as quickly on his own. Diggory guessed that the old gentleman must be Uncle Andrew, but you really couldn't see his face. His tall hat had been bashed down over it. Diggory rushed out and joined the crowd. "That's the woman! That's the woman!" cried the fat man, pointing at Jadis. "Do your duty, constable. Hundreds of thousands of pounds worth she's taken out of my shop. Look at that rope of pearls around her neck. It's mine. And she's given me a black eye, too. What's more?" "That she has, governor," said one of the crowd. "And as lovely black eyes I wish I'd wish to see. Beautiful bit of work it must have been. Gaw, ain't she strong, then?" "You ought to put a nice raw beefsteak on it, mister. That's what it wants," said the butcher's boy. "Now then," said the most important of the policemen, "what's all this here?" "I tell you, she," began the fat man, when someone else called out, "Don't let the old cove in the cab get away. He put her up to it." The old gentleman, who was certainly Uncle Andrew, had just succeeded in standing up and was rubbing all of his bruises. "Now then," said the policeman to him, "what's all this about?" "One full of puff mushrooms," came Uncle Andrew's voice from inside the hat. "None of that now," said the policeman sternly. "You'll find this is no laughing matter. Take that hat off, see?" This was more easily said than done. But after Uncle Andrew had struggled in vain with the hat for some time, two other policemen seized it by the brim and forced it off his head. "Thank you, thank you," said Uncle Andrew in a faint voice. "Thank you. Dear me, I'm terribly shaken. If someone could give me a small glass of brandy..." "Now you attend to me, if you please," said the policeman, taking out a very large notebook and a very small pencil. "Are you in charge of that there young woman?" "Look out," called several voices, and the policeman jumped a step backward just in time. The horse had aimed a kick at him, which would probably have killed him. Then the witch wheeled the horse around so that she faced the crowd and its hind legs were on the footpath. She had a long, bright knife in her hand, and had been busily cutting the horse free from the wreck of the hansom. All this time, Diggory had been trying to get into the position to which he could touch the witch. This wasn't at all easy. On the side nearest him, there were too many people. And in order to get around to the other side, he'd have to pass between the horse's hooves and the railings of the area that surrounded the house, for DeKitterly's house had a basement. If you know anything about horses, and especially if you have seen one in a state that the horse was in at that moment, you would realize that this is a tricklish thing to do. Diggory knew lots about horses, but he set his teeth and got ready to make a dash for it as soon as he saw a favorable moment. A red-faced man in a bowler hat had just now shouldered his way up to the front of the crowd. "Oi, policeman," he said. "That's my horse she's setting on. Same as it's my cab that she's made matchwood of." "One at a time, please, one at a time," said the policeman. "But there ain't no time," said the cabby. "I know that horse better than you do. 'Tain't an ordinary horse. His father was an officer's horse, charging the cavalry wolves. And if that young woman goes on hexing him, there'll be murder done. Here, let me get at him." The policeman was only too glad to have a good reason for standing further away from the horse. The cabby took a step nearer, looked at Jadis, and said in a not unkindly voice, "Now, missy, let me get at his head and just you get off. You're a lady, and you don't know what those roughs going for you, do you now? You want to come go home and have a nice cup of tea and lay down quiet-like. Then you'll feel ever so much better." At the same time, he stretched out his hand toward the horse's head with the words, "Steady, Strawberry, old boy, steady now." Then, for the first time, the witch spoke. "Dog," came her cold, clear voice, ringing loud above all the other noises. "Dog, unhand our royal charger. We are the Empress Jadis." Hey guys, this is Abigail Yon, the voice of the English Corner. If you like what you've been listening so far, head over to anchor.fm/Abigail-Yon. You'll be able to support me there. This just helps me to continue what you've been listening to so far and helps me to continue doing what I'm doing, further what I'm doing, add more content, post more. So head over to anchor.fm/Abigail-Yon. Make sure to capitalize the A in Abigail. Hear from you soon.